Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And today we are covering COP26 again. I'm delighted to be joined back on the podcast by Aideen O'Doherty, who is an assistant professor in DCU and also a member of the Not Here, Not Anywhere campaign. We're also joined by two other activists from the Not Here, Not Anywhere campaign who are also in COP26 in Glasgow. We are joined by Mita Power, who is a research assistant in equality, diversity and inclusion, and also Dylan Murphy, who is studying for a master's in climate policy in DCU and has also worked or is working on Bernie Sanders' campaign in the US. And we're going to just give a quick plug to the protest in Dublin, which takes place as part of the Global Day of Action for Climate Justice. That's this coming Saturday at 12 o'clock, starting from the Garden of Remembrance and marching to Dáil Éireann. I will be there. I hope you will be too. And we need to do this, and it's very, very clear. And also, just if you want to check out the Not Here, Not Anywhere, you can look at gotonothere.com and find out about the campaign, which is a nationwide grassroots group campaigning to end fossil fuel exploration and the develop of new fossil fuel infrastructure in Ireland. And also, just a reminder, we are a podcast that is completely independent, reliant on patrons to fund the cost of production. It does cost to produce. If you can, go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, become a supporter, and really help us keep putting out podcasts like this that bring the voices and analysis of the big issues around inequality, social justice, and the environment to you. I'm going to go to you first, Aideen O'Doherty, just in terms of maybe you could give a sense. You spoke to you yesterday around, you know, the experience in COP, and obviously it is a bit more to go. But from your perspective, looking at it, how do you see, you know, COP? Is it actually going to have an impact?
Yeah, no, good question. Like, I think we were talking about yesterday about all the promises that are being made and how that, you know, Micheál Martin's methane, you know, signing up to the global methane pledge of 30% reduction is now going to be like the climate action plan is coming out this afternoon. And, you know, the sort of the leaks are suggesting that it's going to be, we're just making a 10% methane cut commitment. So like, that's the issue, the lack of kind of, hopefully the climate action plan will have the policies in place there that will help us to meet these targets. But it's hard not to be cynical when we're, you know, they're saying that like the best we're doing is maybe a 1.9 degree rise in temperature with all the new pledges, which obviously we're not guaranteed to meet all the new pledges. Like that's including India's, reduce emissions by 70% net zero by 2070. A lot of countries, including Ireland, have net zero by 2050 as a pledge. But yeah, even with all those new pledges, it's we're still looking at a 1.9 degree temperature rise, which like when you see what's already happened with the 1 degree temperature rise, like it is terrifying. And I don't think that the, you know, Micheál Martin gave his speech was grand on there were good things in his speech on Tuesday, and he said like, you know, we are taking it seriously, and a couple of people have said, yeah, or, you know, the government is properly taking climate seriously now. But I won't believe it. Like, I'm an accountant, I won't believe it until we see proper accounting happening, not just for emission, but for things like the climate finance pledge or 225 million, the new pledge, until we see where exactly that money is coming from, going to where, you know, what the accounting is on a worldwide scale. It's hard to sort of believe that it will actually happen. But yeah, at least we're not at the 2.7 degrees warming that we were talking about at the beginning of the week.
And just on the access you mentioned yesterday in terms of civil society being included, because you were saying essentially that there was no access to the negotiations, and is this continuing? Are civil society being listened to, being heard as part of the negotiations?
Yeah, so like, the access to negotiations some of us are on party overflow badges, which means you're kind of with the Irish delegation, the, you know, the civil servants who are doing negotiating. But until today, we had been told that, you know, from the UNFCCC level, we've been told that we don't have access to negotiations or plenaries or, you know, anything like that. But today something came through that that's changed. So hopefully, because, yeah, a lot of people have been talking about this, there's been a lot of pressure to kind of give people access to the negotiations. But I know for... But even like the blue zone and the green zone, actually, if you guys want to, so we're in the green zone today and not here, not anywhere. So yeah, and the blue zone is totally separate.
Yeah, Dylan or Amita, do you want to come in there on that?
No, we were just kind of talking about it earlier on that, you know, it does, there's free shuttle buses, you know, that's brilliant in terms of the access around the city to them. But there is quite a notable difference, I suppose, or distance between the green zone and the blue zone. And absolutely, it requires a huge amount of space to accommodate. But you do have to, I suppose, consider as well to what extent there was intention behind making them so geographically separate. And I suppose it makes a statement, I guess, in terms of who's doing the negotiations and who's seen as maybe the educators, the campaigners, and the NGOs, and like, just talking earlier to activist groups, to campaigners, like it has to, I suppose, in going forward, it has to come from a top down and bottom up perspective. You know, there has to be that collaboration. You can see here, the energy here is amazing. The like the people power behind it, it's really, really empowering to see, and it's really inspiring to see. And there's so many people doing so much work for this, you know, and we're so ready and so willing to kind of work with those people who are negotiating these massive massive decisions, you know. And it is just, it would be lovely to see that those voices were being listened to, particularly I suppose we were also talking about I guess the lack of representation from the global south, that, you know, the people who are evidently most impacted, you know, they should be the ones really leading this. You know, we should be learning from them in terms of what we need to do. And there's just not that representation there. You know, you can absolutely make that argument. It's a conference happening in Scotland. Of course, there's going to be like a huge representation of white people here. But just the platforms aren't there in terms of being led by the voices of experience. And I think that would be something. And yeah, just in terms of the accessibility or in terms of the representation that I feel could have been improved on.
Yeah, and in terms of like representation within the green zone where we are, like I found it surprising when I had a walk around that there's a big...
Just explain briefly again the difference between the green zone and the blue zone.
Yeah,
blue zone.
Sure. So the green zone is... But the blue zone is where all the politicians are and civil servants, and that's where they're negotiating all these various different agreements. And the green zone is an area that's accessible to the general public, and they can come in and look at exhibitions from different groups about climate stuff. And that's what we're doing. Not here, not anywhere. We're exhibiting at the green zone, and we have a couple passes to that, but we only have one pass to the blue zone, where the actual substantive discussions are and negotiations are happening. So just, I was kind of surprised, though, even though the green zone is an area that the public are allowed to go into, I was surprised by the fact that there's a huge presence of big corporations here, and they're presenting like their climate goals and that kind of stuff, which is great. But there's not a lot of grassroots activist groups, and that's what we are. We're all volunteers, grassroots. And we had people coming up to us quite surprised, like, oh, you're volunteers. Like, that's pretty interesting. And one of them said, oh, we can tell you're volunteers, which was maybe a bit of, I'm not sure if to take that as a compliment or an insult, but they were happy to see
you
us
look
anyway.
Normal.
We look normal.
Probably not wearing a suit is the thing.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. I left my suit at home. I couldn't take it on the train with me. The bag was too packed, you know. But yeah, I think the presence here, who the public are speaking to, there's not a huge presence of grassroots groups that I could see anyway. And that's maybe slightly disappointing, but it's good that we're there to fill the void to a certain degree.
Yeah, it's a big question, I think, in terms of that. The, you know, I listened to, I don't know if you listened to it as well, David Attenborough's speech to the delegates, and I was quite struck by the things he brought in. He brought in essentially saying that we have to act now, not in 6 months' time, not in a year's time. And also he brought in very much the agenda of equality. But, you know, it sets out kind of the scale of the disaster and what is impending, but also the necessity of a socially just transition, that it is equal both in the global north and the global south as well. But from your perspective, do you see this idea of, you know, obviously what you're campaigning for, you know, is keep fossil fuels in the ground, you know, in terms of, you know, going to real zero rather than net zero. Is this speech by the likes of David Attenborough, is that just like something that's seen as out there and the real business is just kind of how we tinker a bit with the system rather than making major change? How do you see like that discussion going on at COP?
Yeah, I can talk about that because I've been here a few days and seeing some of the speeches. Yeah, the strange thing is, you know, you have your all the climate celebrities are here. So, you know, we're passing interest in climate celebrities here. So Leonardo DiCaprio is here. You know, you've got Bill Gates is doing something, you know, some like invitation only thing. And then Jeff Bezos obviously had this sort of famously like disconnected speech a couple of days ago where he talked about how he realized when he went to space, you know, which is a pretty carbon intensive activity, when he went to space, how fragile the Earth was and how we all have to, you know, look after it. And in the same sort of like in the, you know, the rooms across the way, there'll be like, I was at the COP president's dialogue with indigenous peoples the other day. So you had indigenous people representing indigenous peoples groups from all around the world, you know, from across all different continents. And, you know, they're all saying the same thing to the, you know, to the COP president, which is like, I mean, they, you know, they weren't easy on them. Like they were like, yeah. you know, you've been exploiting our resources for years. You're refusing to, you know, you're making commitments and not sticking to them. You're refusing to, it's a big deal to get to this 100 billion climate finance target. The loss and damages and the reparations, like that's a big sort of negotiating item here. And it's like there's a total disconnect between Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates, or even things like some of the pavilions, like are very so pavilions are like in the middle of the blue zone, which is like the one, the kind of more restricted access zone where all the negotiations happen. It's still got like 30,000 people in it, but there weren't that many badges for activists and civil society. But yeah, it's like they're at totally different conferences. You know, there's the indigenous peoples and the people from countries that are most affected by climate change, you know, where people are dying now. Like that's, you know, that's their message. And you have those sort of people and groups, and then you have the climate celebrities, including, you know, the world leaders and the business leaders, if that's what you want to call them, and then you have outside the activists, and it's like they're talking past each other a little bit. And I mean, I don't mean to be negative about it. Like it is great to, like, well, from a personal perspective, like for us to hear the, you know, the voices of Indigenous peoples and to, you know, to be able to hear that. But I feel like, yeah, are the people who need to be listening actually listening? It's hard to say. And you know, having said that, it is all of our first COPs. So maybe this is the way it always is. But the word is, like, people who've been to lots of COPs are saying that it's more, there's more of a disconnect this year, more of a separation.
Yeah. And in terms of that question, Dylan, Armida, where, like, in terms of, like, we've seen, you know, we saw Greta on the streets, how big do you think the protest will be in Glasgow on Saturday? And what is the energy and ideas from the kind of civil society movements about where do we go after COP?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because COP has kind of been sold as the kind of last hope for the climate, you know? So what happens if this last hope for the climate, in inverted commas, doesn't pan out? Like, and there's a big protest, as you mentioned, that's being organized for Saturday, and there's already been a massive police presence that we've witnessed, and there's been some, we were only coming in last night, so we haven't been able to experience like the whole extent of it, but we've been told that there's been a big kind of Extinction Rebellion kind of protests about an insular Britain as well have been around, and there's been a massive police kind of presence around kind of direct action and that aspect. So they're ready for something to happen, and we expect things to happen in terms of the activists being heard on Saturday. And it seems like, from what I could see, Greta Thunberg is aligning herself with that kind of Saturday protest activist type group, and that makes sense. She kind of came from Fridays for Future. She started that on the streets. So we're expecting Saturday to be quite interesting. And those voices that we talked about previously, that's where they're going to be heard on the streets. If they don't get the voice within the buildings, they're going to be heard in the streets. And we expect it to be quite eventful and exciting on Saturday.
And then I suppose just in terms of moving forward, I guess it's really to kind of pay attention to the specifics that are being claimed, the specifics that are being promised, and really holding politicians to account via lobbying, via applications and submissions to applications, which is, I suppose, is where Not Here, Not Anywhere would really have a strength, I suppose, in the campaigning that we would do and leading. I hope you can edit this out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll cut it there.
I'll find you were going. Okay, you want to leave it there. Fine, perfect. Just on that, maybe if one of you could explain, because I think it's a very interesting concept and we discussed it some length yesterday, but the question of what is real zero as opposed to net zero and what that means.
Yeah, no, I can talk a little bit about that. Net zero, it's so confusing because some people say net zero, some people say carbon neutral, and I'm not sure I even understand the specific differences between the two. Like, so the issue with net zero is that it's about everything that, you know, you can emit into the atmosphere, you can emit the emissions as long as you take them back out again. So, you know, that could be done through, you know, our carbon sinks, like peatlands, like bogs, but also, and forests, obviously. But the criticism a lot of people have of net zero is that the rich countries are relying on CCS, carbon capture and storage, and other technologies to kind of take emissions out of the atmosphere. So, you know, a lot of sort of the environmental movement has tried to stay away from that narrative around CCS. And yeah, the thing about the net zero pledges is it sort of leaves the door open, or it kind of it pushes the reductions that are required now that I can't stress this enough. We have to start reducing, you know, 10 years ago, we have to start reducing rapidly, urgently, our emissions from where they are now. And hopefully the new carbon budgets will help with that. But yeah, it's sort of, it puts the kind of, it's almost a get out of jail free card in that, like, no, we're going to have, you know, operational carbon capture and storage by, you know, 2035 or 2040. So that means we'll be able to, you know, to backload the reductions that were required. So that's the issue with net zero. And then actually a good illustration of in terms of like real zero versus net zero. I was at a talk the other day on it wasn't on data centers, but it touched on data centers because they were talking a bit about data centers because it was about 100% renewable energy without offsets. So you have a lot of data centers, and Not Here, Not Anywhere campaigns on data centers. You have a lot of them saying that they are 100% run on 100% renewable energy. What they're actually doing is buying, they have these power purchase agreements. They're buying renewable energy credits. So that means that they're actually not using 100% renewable energy. You know, if any energy company tells you that, like, it's not true. They're buying the credits from somewhere else. So they're offsetting. So that's a kind of an example of, you know, that's not really 100% renewable energy. And there's the same sort of issues when it comes to something like net zero.
Yeah, I think an interesting one with net zero, Dylan, as well, is that it's kind of like an emission of defeat in a sense, because it's saying that we don't need to change the systems. It's saying that we can continue a business as usual if we just offset it. We can continue destroying these environments and using polluting kind of fossil fuels as long as we offset it. But we can't continue like that. We need to move to renewable systems. That's what zero can be. Actual zero can be is not creating those emissions in the first place, not having to offset them in the first place. And that's what we try and campaign on, Not Near Here, Not Anywhere, is we don't need transition fuels like LNG and liquid natural gas in inverted commas. We need to go and invest directly in renewables technology, and we have the capacity in Ireland for a lot of renewable technology, but it's not happening at the moment. And that's what actual zero can be, is not creating emissions in the first place.
It's an interesting one, I think, and it's something that, you know, is just, it's like it's incredible that the whole framing of the commitments under COP are all about net zero. And there's no mention in the mainstream media, as far as I've seen, I don't know, have you seen it anywhere, around this idea of real zero. Has it been raised in the, like, the COP negotiations or with the delegations, the country delegations, the idea of real zero as opposed to net zero?
Yeah, I think the thing about net zero is, well, first of all, it allows, as Dylan said, it allows that kind of, you know, it can be a little bit of a cop-out, but so that's one thing why they're so keen on it. But also it's a catchy slogan, you know, net zero sounds good. And it's very much like businesses were doing this first, you know, it's very much, you know, they've been making net zero pledges and not meeting them for many years. Some of them, there is loads of good work being done as well. But, and you definitely see that at COP, like Dylan was talking about, the corporate elements, and there, you know, there's a lot of launches of kind of corporate initiatives. Like there was one on sustainability reporting standards yesterday, which is, you know, which could be positive unless it represents more kind of corporate capture. Somehow you will help to reduce emissions by buying more of our products. You know, that's the sort of, and I think that's part of the popularity of net zero, is that it sounds great, you know, as opposed to the boring sort of, and actually the, you know, the new carbon budgets are they're a step towards a more sort of, you know, what some people might call it boring, but I would call it a kind of a substantive accounting for actual emissions reductions, because you have these precise figures and reductions calculated. There's going to have to be a report on them every year, and it'll be assigned to specific people. So something like that is much more substantive than a net zero carbon pledge, which is unfortunately the bulk of what we see at COP.
Yeah, and I'd say, like, another thing about net zero, there's like an interesting parallel with COVID-19 that we're facing. Like, and it's just that the climate doesn't care that we're going to offset it later on. It cares about what's happening right now. And these are emissions that are cumulative as well. Like the emissions that, and the disastrous effects that we're facing now are from the decade previous. So what we're doing now is cumulative, and the actions that we take now are going to affect the future in a significant way that can be overturned very quickly. So we're selling out the future in a sense with net zero. We need to do this right now to make these changes, or else we're locked into a certain type of future, you know? So it needs to be done now. Like, and we can't have business as usual in that sense. We need to go straight to these low carbon technologies, like renewable kind of wind farms and that kind of stuff, like, and solar as well. So net zero has a lot of issues in that sense.
Yeah. It's very interesting, I think, as a discussion. Just another question. Is there any countries that are kind of going outside the box and actually, you know, challenging and arguing for a much more radical approach, a much more radical, like, going towards that real zero?
Idea. The countries from the global south, who are the ones who can actually see, you know, climate change. I know we're starting to see a little bit of it around Europe this year, but yeah, the countries in the global south, like when we were watching the world leaders speeches the other day, just, you know, just some of them are around when Micheál Martin was speaking, and the countries caught all come up, the prime ministers and stuff all come up in random order. So like you'll see every rich country will be saying, like, we take this seriously and we will pledge to do more, and every country from the global south or the places, you know, most affected by climate change will be saying, you know, you said you were going to do this years ago, you didn't do it, what's going on, where is this 100 billion, what's, you know, and they're like, are they responding? Like I said, you know, I said there was that dialogue with indigenous peoples, but it wasn't actually it was the COP president, his name is Alok Sharma. He was listening. He wasn't actually, you know, maybe responding. Like, you know, yeah. I don't know if it was engaged listening, if you like.
Yeah. And is there any European country that is taking a step outside? Or are they all just pretty much?
Yeah, like, it's not something that I'm noticing anyway. It all seems quite business as usual. And we got this handled, and we kind of know what we're doing, and there's no necessary, it's not even like we wouldn't even consider it thinking outside the box, but it's just the lack of even talking about fossil fuels. Like there was hardly any mentions of reduction in fossil fuels in that sense and usage. I think there's kind of like a sense of apathy around this is the way that it's going to be, and radical change isn't possible. We need to keep doing things the way they are, but just more efficiently and offsetting it as well.
Also, in a few countries, I would say Germany, Denmark, Scotland, they're good for community energy, you know, which is also a really important transition we're going to have to make, where we really need to transition away from this idea of energy being this privately owned resource, and it needs to be far more based in the community. It needs to be owned by the people. We need to decide how our energy is being used. So there's definitely countries in Europe who are transitioning to a much more community-based energy system. Obviously not happening fast enough at the moment, but it's good that there are those very successful examples in neighboring countries, I guess, to Ireland.
And I think that's really interesting, and it's a good one. And I think it's a good one to look at. And I think in particular, an area that, you know, I cover a lot is the whole issue of housing, and the question of, you know, how we achieve both, you know, affordable homes and sustainable homes that are, and how do we address these multiple crises that are affecting us? And that, how do you feel that amongst young people and younger generations who've really, you know, pushed this to the fore, that is there a danger of a sense of despair around this? Because it's, you know, or is there that still that energy that, you know, we need to keep pushing to solve this, which clearly, you know, so many of us believe that's what is needed. We have no alternative but to keep pushing.
We're like, who's going to take it? You can't see us, but we're being like, who's going to take that? I feel like we've ended up saying like, oh yeah, COP, you know, promises, will they be met? This is the 26th COP and what's... But like, what is different? Okay, there were always, you know, protests at COP and everything. What is different is the scale of the protests. Like, everyone knows who Greta Thunberg is. You know, everyone knows, and loads of our, you know, there's amazing Irish school strikers as well, like, and different school striking groups, and loads of, you know, there is far more energy now, and like, you would hope that can be translated into more accountability. Like, that's the ultimate, and you know, that's the bit that's been kind of, you know, a bit concerning at COP, that like the separation of, you know, the zones and stuff, and the fact that like, I was in the blue zone yesterday when there was a big XOR protest happening outside, and I didn't know anything about it. Like, if you're in the blue zone, it's like being at not all of it, but lots of it is like being at one of those like corporate expo things where they're trying to sell you fridges and stuff, you know, like a lot of it is a bit like that, whereas, yeah. And there's a big protest happening out in the bridge, but you can't see it. But like, I think that is different. Like, there is energy. And I think I've noticed, I don't know if the others would agree, but I've noticed like when the school strikes kind of first came out a few years ago, there was a lot of, it was a bit patronizing sometimes, the response from politicians, like, oh, the kids, you know, they know what's up. And now those kids are, now those kids can all vote. So I think the attitude has changed a little bit, and you're seeing more of the kind of, you know, things like the, you know, the private jets and the big security details. You know, you see like John Kerry walking around cops, surrounded by like all his security men and all that kind of stuff, and activists aren't allowed into the plenary rooms because there were protests a couple of years ago, you know, disrupting the negotiations. So I think that the atmosphere is definitely more, there's far more pressure on them now, and that's a good thing. And that, you know, that does make, well, makes me hopeful anyway. Mm. And like, I can't wait for the march on Saturday. Obviously it's, yeah, in Dublin and in loads of places around Ireland. But yeah, I think it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be really good here, and hopefully they'll start listening.
Yeah, I'd say kind of what Aileen's saying there, the hopes seem to be coming from the people on the streets rather than the people in the buildings.
Yeah, and I think like it's easy to kind of get bogged down a little bit, you know, where like we're a volunteer group, we all have our own kind of agendas, we all have our own 9-to-5s, and it's kind of like, what on earth can I as an individual or we as a group do versus, you know, these massive multinational companies, you know, who have so much lobbying power. But it is, yeah, it's the kind of thing of like, it is events like these and collaborative efforts like these that really give, like, re-energize the campaign and re-energize the work that we do. And absolutely, it's it's easy to become nihilistic, like, if you allow yourself, but it is just things like this where you realize how many people are actually behind like a shared goal and a common vision. And I think the more collaboration that can be organized, particularly on an international basis, the more energy there will be to keep fueling and keep growing the movement behind, I suppose, climate activism.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And I think fueling, of course, with renewable energy, the climate activists. The other thing is that, you know, I think it is important that, you know, we say and that people who are involved and everyone, you know, we have no alternative but to do this. There is no alternative. Like, we have to achieve, you know, the changes, and we have to achieve the alternative economic model that's required. And so we have to keep pushing for it and keep working in whatever way we can. And I think the movements give a huge hope that people are really concerned about it and people want to do something and aren't just going to let the politicians go on for business as usual. But listen, guys, thanks so much. It was great for you to join us today, and hopefully we could chat to you before the week is out. You're there for another few days yet?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're protesting on Saturday. We are here. Oh, and also I might give a shout out to, if you want to follow, we've been documenting COP on our Insta story, so including our journeys here. So a couple of our group, Richard and Gary, cycled all the way over here. So they documented all that, and it's in a highlight on our Insta, NHNA Ireland. There's a COP26 highlight where you can see all the stories and what we're trying to do with that. Like, obviously, you know, it's a bit of crack, but also it's we're trying to like take pictures of things like the plenary meetings, like the kind of, you know, hopefully negotiations, might get into some of them now, to show people like, okay, so this, you know, to give a bit of access to like, this, you know, this is what's happening over here. This is what it looks like. And yeah, to give like that whole kind of picture of what COP is all about. So yeah, follow us on Insta.
Great. Brilliant. Listen, thanks so much. And we look forward to hearing from you then after the protests on Saturday and early next week. Then it'd be great to connect in. And a reminder to our listeners here in Ireland that you can join the protest on Saturday at 12 noon in Garden Remembrance, marching to the Dáil. It is very important that people raise their voices, join the protest. I'll be there, hopefully bring some of the kids along, because it is not just our future, it's their future, and of course the planet's future and the future of humanity that really is at risk, and we have to come together to change it and fundamentally change how we're doing things. And I think what is disappointing for me is that out of the pandemic, which should have led to a transformation in how we view our societies and our economies, that instead it almost seemed it dissipated to a certain extent the energy and movements and didn't energize governments for change. But hopefully as the pandemic resides and recedes, that that energy of the movements will come back, that will then force governments to make the changes. But listen, thanks so much, guys, for joining me today on Reboot Republic. And a reminder to our listeners, please, if you can, become a supporter of Reboot Republic. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. The podcast costs to produce. It's an independent podcast reliant on you. So please, if you can, sign up for whatever you can each week. Support us to keep going, keep these podcasts going out. And if you do have an issue you want to raise, a comment, a question, a guest you'd suggest, you can contact us at reboot republic@gmail.com or get us on at Rory Hearn at Twitter and also on Instagram as well. And thank you so much to Dylan, Sheila and Aideen for joining me today.
Thank you.